formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back.
Welcome back to Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. I'm Tux and he's Noah, and we're your hosts for today's review and preview doubleheader. So, first of all, I've been away for a while, but I've still been involved with the podcast. And no, Josh hasn't gone anywhere. I'm just stepping in for this week since I have a little bit of free time. With that, we're going to get right into the Rice review. And then we're going to preview Oklahoma State and then give you the same bunch of goodies like we normally do with our hot takes and some player names that we like and then our score predictions, all right? So with that, we're going to get started with Rice. The things that we want to kind of take away from Rice were some of the injuries that kind of are going to linger with us. And the first one being BJ Foster. He's still hurt from the LSU game. And DeMarvion Overshown is also now injured, and he missed Rice with a back injury, and both of those guys are probably going to miss some time. The next one is Zach Shackelford. He kind of had a scare with Derek Kerstetter rolling up on him. He had to be carted off the field, and it was kind of a scary moment for Texas because the center depth is kind of lacking, but Herman says that Shackelford is going to be good to go for the Oklahoma State game, and so is Derek Kerstetter, so we're not going to have to shuffle some guys around. The last one is a transfer news that hit the Twitter and everything yesterday. Caleb Johnson has entered the transfer portal. So there were rumors of a shoulder injury that hadn't quite fully healed, and it looks like Juwan Mitchell passed him up on the depth chart because he started the Rice game. So what do you think about Caleb Johnson leaving and some of these other guys who may not be active for the Oklahoma State game, Noah?
Yeah, well, first off, I mean, that was the biggest thing everybody wanted going into the Oklahoma State game was just going into the Rice game was just no injuries. We want to play a good game, win the football game, but stay healthy. So it's good that Shaq is going to be back. I think that we would be okay without him because so far from what we've seen, which is just a couple of possessions, but Denzel Okafor has looked actually pretty good, better than I expected this season. And Kerstetter has filled in fine for Shackelford. It definitely would have been a step down, but I don't think it would have been disastrous. But it's always nice to have your veteran leader back, especially for a line that still has some communication issues and pass protection stuff to clean up. But as far as Caleb Johnson goes, it's hard to gauge because, I mean, he hasn't even seen the field this year, so we can't really say how much of an impact it's been. I think that our linebacking crew is like, it's not a deep unit. I don't want to say that this is a deep unit, and I want it to be taken as me saying that it's a deep unit. But it has some low-key depth moving forward, right? So, like, right now, guys like Marcus Tillman and David Benda aren't seeing any playing time, and they can't really be counted on as contributors right now. But neither was Caleb Johnson. So Johnson's exit really is going to have more of a long-term impact, and I think that by the time that he would have been ready to go, those guys will be ready to go. So I think that overall it's not going to have a huge impact on the program just because I think that those other guys are going to be able to step into his shoes. And with how many linebackers we've taken the last two classes, it's kind of just like a numbers game. You're just hoping that some of them stick, and it's looking like some of them are. And so that's kind of what the plan was, regardless of who those guys are that actually emerge.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And it just kind of seems like the linebacker room is, I wouldn't say it's on shaky ground, but it's not on the steadiest ground, you know what I mean? Because we're still missing Floyd, and we have to kind of see what we get from these younger guys first.
Yeah, it's definitely not it's definitely not in like a strong situation, but there is some hope for optimism. You mentioned Juwan Mitchell. He had a really good game against Rice. Looking forward to see what he can do.
Yeah, so let's just get right into the Rice game. I thought our defense actually played pretty well. It looked like Rice really wanted to impose their will and their physicality and try to just beat us straight up. And just, man, Coburn was not having it, was he?
No. I kind of have said the last couple of weeks that Coburn has, like, we've seen good things from him in game. You know, like, he's looked quick, he's been able to shoot in a gap, he's looked strong at times, but he hasn't actually translated any of that into actual disruption or production But against Rice, he absolutely did that. Like, he was absolutely dominant at times. He was taking on triple teams. He was throwing guys down. He looked really good. And so if he manages to actually keep up that level of play as we move into conference play, that's going to be absolutely massive for this defense.
Yeah, and it's such a huge boon to the linebackers to have a defensive tackle who can do the kind of things he does and eat up blockers or actually try to penetrate. We haven't seen him get a lot of tackles for loss or sacks because guys have been getting the ball out really quick against this defense, but he's still showing the promise that, you know, we saw when we signed him being a four-star defensive tackle. And I love the way he's playing, and really the defense as a whole, I know it's just Rice, but they pitched a shutout through the first three quarters, or most of the first three quarters, and just they played about as well as they could have, really.
Yeah, they definitely did, and it was also kind of cool because we saw them play much differently than, I mean, likely most of the other games this season is going to require them to, because Rice was pro style. They ran a lot of like I formation, jumbo packages, multiple tight ends. They had a fullback. Might be the only time I see a fullback on defense this year.
I don't know about that. I watched a little bit of the K-State, Mississippi State game, and K-State was just running the I formation, running everything out of it, basically.
Oh, really? Okay, that's cool. I knew they were moving more pro style, but I wasn't sure how much actual like I form and stuff. I haven't done much K-State scouting yet. But so, I mean, that's a good thing to see from a defense, that they're able to play like against different schemes and be successful in different scenarios. And I mean, K-State looks good this year, so I wouldn't call them a contender for the conference yet, but whatever they're doing, it seems to be resonating with the new coaching staff, so it's good that we're actually going to have some form of preparation going into that game.
Yeah, for sure. You know, speaking of people who are prepared, I feel like that offense for Texas came to play. Sam Ellinger, it feels like he heard everybody on the Texas sideline and everywhere else in the Texas Longhorn fan universe saying that, you know, he needs to connect better with Jake Smith and Devin Duvernay, because that's all he's been doing since the second half of the LSU game.
Yeah, he heard me.
Yeah.
Because I've been showing that from the mountaintops, but yeah.
Jake Smith and Sam have been a step too slow. You know, like, if they could connect, that would be this offense taking another step forward. And that's exactly what we saw against Rice. It started off with a deep pass to Jake Smith. And from there, it just felt like, you know, Sam entered this game in rhythm and he never quite stepped out of rhythm.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely how it felt. I think that's a really good way to put it. Like, we scored 31 points in the second half against LSU. Then we scored 31 points in the first half against Rice. There was no drop-off, nothing. There wasn't any hangover. He's looked like a different player since halftime against LSU. He absolutely has been more accurate. I don't think decisiveness or confidence has ever been an issue for him this season, but he's actually been able to convert on those throws that he kind of missed in the first six quarters of play this year. So, I mean, he was good the first six quarters, but he's just been on a different level ever since then, and that's great to see. I'm so happy about that.
You know, I'm not sure what the relation quite is, but we saw this last year. The first big home game Texas had was USC coming to town, and then somewhere in the second quarter, it just felt like we saw a different Sam who started to air the ball out, looked very good doing so, and then the entire year it was on. And I'm hoping that the second half against LSU, something similar just kind of clicked in Sam, where he realizes, like, he can ball out, he has the ability, he has the talent to do so, and now he's just going to show it.
Yeah, and I think that it even kind of goes beyond Sam, because, like, that USC, it clicked in the second quarter, right? Like, I think that I honestly think the season, or this play that saved our season last year was that first, like, Little Jordan moment, where he hits Little Jordan on the out route, he spins, takes it into a touchdown, cuts the lead from 14-3 to 14-10. And I think that kind of was a moment where we, beyond Sam himself, but the Herman and Beck and everybody, kind of realized the identity of the offense. And last year, it was to get Little Jordan Humphrey the ball, throw jump balls to Colin Johnson, you know, be this big physical team, use the big wide receivers. Whereas this year, starting kind of in that second half against LSU, we've seen much more of a transition to spread. There's always been an emphasis on Duvernay in the slot, but I mean, the LSU game, he had one catch in the first half. Second half, he has, what, like 11? So I think that it's kind of just realizing what works for the offense and really making more of a commitment to doing those things. And yeah, you absolutely saw that carry over into the Rice game with the vertical passing and more spread concepts.
Yeah, for sure. Last year for Texas, it was the 11 personnel with Beck and Lil Jordan and Colin Johnson and everything. And this year it feels like it's four wide or even five wide seems to be where Texas is doing its most damage, right? Finally, one more thing that I wanted to bring up about the Texas offense. Keyonte Ingram finally looked like Keyonte Ingram, or the player that we expected. He had that great 29-yard touchdown or something, and then he picked up another one later on in the game. Still not quite breaking out and being completely consistent, but we're starting to see that confidence, that swagger come back for him.
I definitely think he improved over the course of the Rice game. And, I mean, you kind of saw at the end with the two big runs you mentioned. He needs to do that against better competition, right? Like the long runs of his career. I know he had one against Tulsa, like a 26-yard touchdown last year. He had the two against Rice. I think he had like a 30-yarder against Oklahoma last year. But he needs to be able to do that more consistently. But at the very least, it's a step in the right direction. It's another flash in the pan. And for a guy that seems to be in his head a little bit, it hopefully is going to be a confidence builder.
Yeah, I hope so too. Because he's always been, in my opinion, just a step away from breaking the big one. You know, I'm not just talking about a 20-yard gain here or there. I'm talking about I would say, half of his plays, he's tripped up or something and he doesn't quite break it. He sees the hole, he's attacking, but it's just, I don't know, like a second too late, half a second, whatever you want to quantify that.
And it's weird because sometimes he's a second too early and sometimes he's a second too late, right? Like Herman has mentioned him being a little bit impatient. So it's like sometimes he'll run into his blockers as they're trying to get into space, and then other times he kind of gets frozen trying to decide what to do. So, yeah, that's the difference between him averaging, I don't know how many yards he's averaging off the top of my head, probably like 5 or 6 right now, and averaging like 7, right? And getting more of those like 8, 9-yard runs versus the 5-yard runs. So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I think at some point the light is going to turn on for him, but it's just a matter of getting reps, you know, being put in more of those positions to make those decisions, and then letting the game slow down until that light finally comes on and he's off to the races.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just not much more can be added there. So one last thing I wanted to mention was the special teams play. Dicker, the kicker, hitting a 57-yarder. And in his press conference, he mentioned how he was actually upset that last week Herman didn't let him kick a 59-yarder against LSU, which I just love this guy's confidence. And that's one thing he's always had, you know, in spades. And then Deshaun Jameson doing a solid for everybody betting on the game by returning that kickoff at the very end. Didn't matter that the game was out of hand. He just wanted to leave his mark. And I'm sure a lot of bettors appreciated that.
I'm sure there were a lot of people out there. Because, I mean, that, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people would take the over against Rice. So, yeah, I think we should just leave Jameson out there on all the returns at this point. He's done enough to earn it. Certainly he's done more than anybody else. And the funny thing about Dicker...
I'm intrigued with putting Jake Smith out there. I want to get the ball into Jake Smith's hand as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't think that it's a bad idea to have Jake Smith. But like, I'm also happy to just keep him as a slot. But then again, he's only a backup, so like, I don't know. It's kind of like it's a win-win situation, I guess.
Yeah, we know that Jameson has the ability, and we also know that Jake Smith has the ability. So yeah, it's a real win-win. But speaking of some guys with ability, we're going to kind of transition into the Oklahoma State offense here in a sec. Or, you know, I call them Oklahoma State. Some people call them Okie Light. There's a Diet Okie. There's also Oklahoma Aggie, since they're the little brother of Oklahoma. You know, whatever you call them, I'm sure there's like other names out there. There's one thing that they've been known for under Gundy, and that's being well prepared on offense against Texas.
Yeah, it's not great that they have the longest active winning streak at DKR. They've won more games consecutively at DKR currently than Texas has, and that's never a spot you want to be in. But, I mean, Gundy's a terrific coach. I guess one thing is that they, at least this year, they only have 3 games of film, right, to really prepare and come up with some game plans against us. Last year, I think they were like the 7th game of the season. So identities were a little bit more set. But it's like, does that really even matter whenever they have the country's leading receiver and the country's leading rusher?
No, it doesn't. But I will say one thing. you know, he's Mike Gundy. I bet that as soon as the LSU game ended and he heard the score, he was all over it, because a lot of the stuff that LSU did, he's going to try to emulate. And I know that Texas fans might be a little scared about getting burnt, since Tyler Wallace is also an Oklahoma State's team, but Oklahoma State does not have the sort of depth that LSU had at wide receiver or running back. They also don't have a passer who's as accurate as Joe Burrow was that night against Texas. So I still think Gundy's going to cook something up. He's, I don't know, extremely intelligent. He's going to find stuff that we didn't even know were issues, and he's going to exploit it.
I agree kind of with that assessment about them not having the ability that LSU had to just on any play go to any of their receiving options, you know, because
yeah,
any of them could be whoever they were lined up against on our defense, whether it was Cook, Green, Stearns, Thompson, like no matter who was lined up, you're going up against a really good wide receiver. Oklahoma State's a little bit more imbalanced with top, like there's a little bit more top heavy with Tylan Wallace, but at the same time, Wallace is probably better than anybody else that LSU had, right? So it'll be interesting. I like Gundy. I fully expect him to find something. He'll probably run a lot of outside zone and kill us with that again. But
the one thing that I've noticed from watching all three of Oklahoma State's games this year is, and they have a new play caller this year from Princeton, I just can't remember his name right now, Gleason, I think, but the one thing that I've noticed is that this guy just has a knack for sensing a blitz and calling the perfect, I guess, screen or quick pass out of it. And I haven't quite seen that from another play caller this year. And I know that it's just been Oregon State, some FCS team, and then Tulsa. But there are legitimately plays where, you know, he just had the perfect thing dialed up and he's getting the ball out in space to his guys. And that's as much as you can really hope for in a spread offense. And that's something that you kind of touched on with the outside zone running, and that's something we're going to see a ton of.
Yeah, certainly. Outside zone is a pretty central part of their scheme from what I've seen just watching some of the games. And they're really good at it. And Chuba Hubbard is, to me, Chuba Hubbard, just a quick aside, then I'll talk more about their play caller. But I think that Chuba Hubbard is kind of like that thing that we're wanting Keyonte Ingram to be. I think he has a little bit better top end speed, but just talking about like the light coming on, hitting the right holes, being confident, decisive when he needs to be, he's just really good. And so I think that's kind of what we're all hoping Keyonte Ingram will become at some point. But then with the play caller,
yeah, and you know, from my watch of Chuba, at least, he goes down a lot on first contact. He's not a guy that's going to break through any tackles. You know, the hard part obviously is getting first contact on him, since he's so quick and fast.
Right, and since they're actually running a lot of zone, that gives him like the freedom to be creative and hit different holes. It's not as simple as just like pursuing the ball carrier, because if you lose discipline and suddenly he's cutting back and hitting the hole that you left behind, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely like an easier thing said than done in terms of getting him down. But with the play caller, I think that it's kind of going to be a cool matchup just to watch the X's and O's, because Orlando, whenever you are as aggressive as Orlando is, you're always going to get beat sometimes, right? But you're willing to live with that. But there have been times where it's happened too much. Like I think Lincoln Riley, like the fourth quarter of the Red River Shootout, he kind of had figured Orlando out at that point. And I think that contributed a lot to that offensive outburst we saw at the end. And so we just can't have... He can't lose that battle for an extended period of time, basically.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be the biggest matchup of the day, is how is Orlando going to fare against Gundy? Last year, it didn't go so well. You know, Oklahoma State just started hot, and then Texas was playing catch-up the whole way there. But Oklahoma State did get the best of Orlando 2 years ago in a game and an ending, which I'm never going to mention again, but it was close, and that Oklahoma State offense was legitimately shut down for almost the entire game. So this is going to be round three, except there's a new play caller on Oklahoma State side, and I feel like it's still probably going to be similar to what Gundy's always done, you know, new play caller aside.
The thing about 2 years ago, that's actually... I mean, it's a good point, because that was definitely a big win for Orlando. That's probably one of the best games defense. I mean, I think it's the best game defensively that we've played under Herman, right? Like taking a top five offense in the country, holding him to 10 in regulation, and just totally shutting down this air raid spread offense. was just really impressive. I'm hoping for round two of that, not round two of last year. But it's a different Oklahoma State offense, even if a lot of those things are the same. And the biggest difference is just that their QB now can run. Spencer Sanders has got wheels.
Yeah, that's for sure. I was trying to think about this. You probably want to take away Chuba, and then you probably want to bracket Wallace however you can. And if you're doing that, that means that Sanders is probably going to get loose. And last year, it was the Oklahoma State quarterback, Taylor Cornelius, getting loose. But he was such a big guy. It's not like he was popping off huge gains. He was just getting enough to move the chains every single time. And I think that's something that Texas is probably going to have to live with on Saturday, is Sanders is going to have to move the ball with his legs, and he likely will pop off a big gain or two, and you might just live with it as long as it's not Hubbard or Wallace doing it to you.
I think so. I think that I definitely think that taking away Hubbard is going to be the number one priority. I mean, Orlando has said that like his number one thing is always to take away the run, because you can't have a team run all over you and also be able to throw the ball. So you have to make them one-dimensional. They have a true freshman quarterback, so he'll probably run, but Orlando has an excellent track record against first-year starters. So I think that we're going to get Sanders a couple times. I'm expecting at least one interception. I would probably lean towards maybe two, but I mean, that's kind of asking for a lot from the defense. But we'll get him a couple times. We'll get him to make some freshman mistakes. We're going to show him some looks that he's never seen before and isn't ready to handle. And hopefully we'll be able to take Wallace away just enough that like he isn't going to beat us.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I would lean towards as well. You know, the one thing I keep seeing is how incredibly top-heavy Oklahoma State's offense is this year. You know, Wallace has something like 50% of their receptions and 50% of their yards. He is the passing offense. And then obviously Chuba Hubbard is their rushing offense. You know, none of the other running backs have really gotten many carries. And, you know, that may just be how Oklahoma State goes into the year, is, you know, here are top three guys and they're probably better than most trios in the country. And they're just willing to I guess, feed those hands.
It is interesting whenever a team has the number one rusher and the number one receiver, because they can only get, there's only so many yards, right? And so if those guys are accounting for literally the most in the country at their position, then you know that something else is lacking. And I mean, to the whole like true freshman thing, it could just be that Wallace is the safety net for Sanders. So you take him away and then suddenly his head's spinning a little bit and he doesn't have the elite receiver to throw it up to, and kind of see what happens from there.
Yeah, like I was talking about earlier, if Oklahoma State, you know, in order to move the ball, is having to rely on their second, third, fourth options or the QB run game, I think you live with that. That is a win. Just means the ball isn't getting out to Wallace or Hubbard. It's just kind of funny because I was watching the Tulsa game, and Tulsa was actually going, you know, single man coverage against Wallace, but just if he was targeted, Tulsa was happy living with a 15-yard penalty of, you know, roughing him rather than, you know, letting him get the big gain on them. It seemed to work in the first half, at least.
Yeah, interesting strategic choice there. not quite what I'm hoping for. And Orlando hasn't really seemed like he likes trying to just take away one receiver, right? Like, in all these big matchups that we have, typically guys like Tylan Wallace or Hollywood Brown or Hakeem. Well, we kind of took away Hakeem Butler. But then what's the Texas Tech wide receiver's name I'm blanking on? Okay, I can't remember the name. But
I know who you're talking
about.
Antoine Wesley.
Yeah, that's right. Antoine Wesley. These guys tend to have big games, so Orlando seems a little bit reluctant to overcommit on stopping these wide receivers. But it might just be a good idea just to see what the freshman's got.
Yeah, for sure. There's also Denzel Mims for Baylor. That was the first time I saw Orlando make an effort to shut down just one wide receiver and then let everything else play out. So I think we've really talked about Oklahoma State's offense as much as we could have. We know it's going to be good, and we know it's going to be probably the best matchup of the day between two coordinators. So let's talk a little bit about their defense, because they have a second-year defensive coordinator in Jim Knowles, who, you know, came in, and he was supposed to be this ultra-aggressive defensive coordinator, and then it really didn't turn out that way last year. And then this year, it really hasn't turned out yet again. They had to replace, I think, the majority of their front seven. And it just shows, like, they had trouble with Oregon State. They had trouble with Tulsa, even. So I don't think their defense is going to be very good, and we might be in for another shootout here.
Yeah, that seems to be what most people are thinking. And I at least expect that to happen from our offense because, I mean, we know our offense is good. And like you said, they've kind of struggled on defense. So that's something we should, and I expect that we will, take advantage of.
Yeah, and from my rewatch of their games, their front seven had a lot of trouble bringing down guys. And I just think that setting up, if we had a healthy running back stable, you know, pounding it at him would just be an amazing idea. Same thing with Devin Duvernay. He has a knack for breaking tackles. It's very tough to bring down. If you get him involved in quick passing game like we did early on in most of our games this year, you know, he could have success, you know, hopefully break one for a big gain again.
Yeah, and I noticed something that stuck out to me and whenever I was watching the games was their linebackers seem to be particularly poor. And like, there's one guy that kind of reminds me of Anthony Wheeler. So it'll be curious to see if we're able to attack that with the zone run game, right? Have Ingram, Rashawn, and Daniel Young kind of take advantage of possibly some slowness at the linebacker position, but then also put them into other tough decision-making situations just in terms of like running option plays, or and that includes like RPOs where we're trying to get them to bite down and then just throwing it behind them. So there are definitely ways to get the passing game involved with that as well.
Yeah, if there's a time to bring out the option game, this is it, especially because we have a bye afterwards. And the other thing is, if we get those linebackers to start moving up, you know, we can just start, like you said, bringing out the RPOs and then attacking with Devin Duvernay and Jake Smith. And then if we get to that point, I feel safe saying that, you know, Texas can score 40 plus easily.
Yep. I'm kind of expecting that. Yeah. The other thing that we're going to have here is their third down rate is really pretty poor. They're allowing 47% right now. And we're typically a pretty good third down offense. I know that there was a stat. I don't know what the stat is at now, but as of like the first quarter of the Rice game, like we had converted on every third and long pass so far this season. So if they're not able to get us off like off the field, it's going to be a long day. Our offense is going to be out there a long time. And then, you know, that can help limit some of their opportunities as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I was looking at some of their defensive guys, and there's a lot of all-name team contenders on there, man. Probably some of the more fun ones that we're going to see this year. So we're just going to jump right into it. One of my favorite that I've seen is linebacker Nadrian, which is N-A apostrophe Drian, Dizadare. I think that's how you say it.
I'm actually going back to the offensive side of the ball. I'm just taking, you know, probably the best player, Chuba Hubbard. I like the bit of, I don't know the exact name of what you would call it, maybe alliteration, but with the double B and Chuba and Hubbard. Yeah, he'd be my number one pick for the
You know, it reads like Chuba, but it isn't.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Chuba. Does that ever throw you off? But not really, just because I know his name from hearing it more than I know from seeing it, so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It reads to me like Chuba, but no, really, it's Chuba. You know, I wouldn't think that a guy named Chuba is actually from Canada, I guess.
Oh, is he from Canada? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he's from Canada.
Interesting.
Really weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. If you told me he's from, like, the Deep South, I would have totally said, yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
But that's just going off of names. The next one is defensive end Amadou Fofana.
Okay, there's another defensive end. We have the name down. I don't even want to try to pronounce it.
Okay, I'm going to try it if you don't want to try
Yeah, please.
Okay, first part's easy. So I'll do the first name, you do the last name, right?
Here, I'll do the first name.
Okay, fine.
You can take the last name.
I'll let you have it. Okay, fine. You do the first name.
Okay, yeah, so Amin, and then...
And then the last name is Ogbong Bemiga.
Ogbong.
I'm pretty sure that second G is silent, but not the third. It's a weird one. All right.
I'm a fan. I have no idea how to pronounce it. But, okay, anyways, go ahead.
I'm going to assume that second G is silent.
Yeah.
And then the last one, wide receiver Dylan Stoner.
Yeah, and you know, if Stoner was on our team, he'd probably be, well, if he was a defensive back, he'd be serving suspensions. Just because that seems to happen on our team a lot. But hey, more power to him up there in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Hey, it hasn't happened yet. This year.
No, it hasn't.
Not happened yet.
We're three games in.
Just knock on wood.
Nine more to go.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so We kind of hinted at our score predictions. You know, I felt that if the offense got rolling, you know, it would really put up big numbers. But I know that for whatever reason, Gundy just has had our number. And the last 4 or 5 games have just been so humiliatingly weird and bad for Texas that I don't have the confidence yet to pick a Tom Herman win against him. Oklahoma State is the only team Texas and Tom Herman have not beat yet, and I'm going to roll with that. I think it's 38-35 Oklahoma State.
Yeah, well, I do have the confidence, and I even have the confidence that our offense is going to come out and it's going to perform the way that we expect. Our defense, I think that LSU game will be the worst performance our defense has this season. That might not necessarily mean that we don't give up 45 points again, you know, because we play Oklahoma once, maybe twice this year. Some other really good offenses. But I think that that's our worst defensive performance just in terms of level of play. And against a school like Oklahoma State, who has looked really good, they haven't played anybody. You know, whenever your toughest opponent is one of the worst P5 teams in the country, you know, Oregon State, I think that it's difficult to judge accurately where they're at as an offense. So I'm going 48-27. I'm thinking that we get Spencer Sanders a couple times, intercept him like once or twice, get a couple key third down stops, and our defense performs better than expected on the way to, I mean, 48-27 is kind of a route. So I feel like I'm stepping out on a ledge here, but that's just my gut feeling about this game. So I'm going to go with it.
I love it. Bold. The mullet doesn't scare you anymore, huh?
Oh, no. The mullet absolutely terrifies me. No, let's not be mistaken. Like, there's totally a world in which he comes up with something crazy. But, you know, I think it's just tough to win whenever you're playing. It's tough to expect a true freshman to perform well against Todd Orlando. In the same way that you're not wanting to pick against the mullet because of the history, I'm kind of sticking with Todd Orlando's history against true freshmen here.
Just a correction, Spencer Sanders is actually a redshirt freshman.
Yeah, that's right, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he has played, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I know he got JT Daniels, I want to say it was Drew Locke's first year as a starter whenever we beat him. I think he was a sophomore. So really what I mean is just like first year starters that don't have that game experience and haven't seen all the looks and had the reps. Orlando tends to fare pretty well.
Yeah, and I think TCU started a first year starter as well last year.
That's right, Robinson. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't very good.
All right, so that was a score prediction, but I want to get another prediction from you, and this isn't something we discussed. So last year, Herman and Gundy nearly fought it out, and I want to get your prediction on this. Is there a round two, and if there's a round two, who wins if they legitimately duked it out in the middle of the field?
Well, I don't think the scumbag Gundy is going to be trying to yell at our players this year, so Herman won't have any reason to fight. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, that was definitely on Herman last year, even if he thought Gundy was... I don't know what he thought Gundy was doing. I don't think there's going to be anything. I think the coaches actually seem to like each other fine, like not like friends or anything, but there seems to be a mutual respect there, even if Herman did get kind of heated last year. So yeah, I first prediction, no, I don't think there will be round two. Second prediction, I mean, like, I like Herman, but let's be real, Gundy's winning that fight. And then third prediction, we also won't have a senior captain out there acting like a goofball as well, because that was the game that Breckenhager got all pissy. Yeah, how about you? I'm assuming that you don't think there will be a fight at midfield this year.
No, I think Herman's going to try to be a little more reserved, and so will the team. And you've seen that, like, the entire team has gone off social media. They just don't want any outside noise, and I can respect it. And I think we're going to see a different Texas this year, at least on that end.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, the last 2 years, the number of memes that the Texas football team has produced has just been absurd.
Yeah.
It's almost every week.
Yeah, Hager with like the Chosen One, Big 12 prophecy thing. That was not great.
Yep.
But,
Sam's go fuck yourself in the UGA game, or like we're back.
Yeah. Although I mean, like, so that stuff isn't, that wasn't his fault that somebody had like the super scanned in picture of the, although the tweet after the West Virginia game, that was Sam's fault. So
no, I'm not saying it's not Sam's fault, but it doesn't matter. Like the sheer number of memes the Texas football team produces is absurd. Like, I don't think there's any other team that's talked about like this. And then this year we already have you know, the AC jokes and all the memes that comes from that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I wouldn't mind having a little bit less off-the-field drama. It'd be pretty nice, actually. But anyways, moving on to the hot takes for the actual week. My hot take for this week is that Devin Duvernay and Jake Smith both have 100 yards from scrimmage. That includes...
I love it.
It includes rushing yards. I don't expect either of them to have any runs, but like, hey, or like if Duvernay throws another pass, I'm going to count that. But yeah, I think that like we... I don't know if we talked about him in the defensive discussion, but AJ Green, one of their cornerbacks, is really good. So I could see another quiet game for Colin Johnson. We've shown that we're targeting the inside receivers more. Maybe we'll even see them both on the field a little bit. I don't think we will. I think we're going to keep on going with the 11 personnel. But yeah, I'm feeling it.
All right. I love it. I like that the staff is adjusting and trying to bring all these guys in and putting the best talent out there. And my hot take is that Iowa State has a close scare with UL Monroe and they pull away late. For whatever reason, they still have not gotten going yet. And it seems like Iowa State waits for OU week to wake up every single year under Campbell. I'm going to predict something similar like this happens this year. And I don't think that Purdy will get benched or anything like that. But there's something definitely off about
it. Well, I was about to make the joke that they just need for Purdy to get injured and then have their backup quarterback step in. Because that's what's happened the last 2 years. But yeah, they're a weird team. They kind of take a while to get going. But I still think they're going to be good. I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me if they do play UL Monroe kind of close.
Yeah. You know, even if they don't get going, that's fine with me. I don't want to have to deal with that in Ames at night.
Well, see, I kind of disagree because I want to go to the Ames game this year. Because in my mind, like Iowa State, this might be the only time in our lifetime that they're actually good. And they seem to have a really, really like amazing like live environment. So I'm kind of hoping to go to the game just to experience that while they're actually good. Because, I mean, Campbell could be gone last year, then they'll just be bad forever. So, I don't know. And I like them being good more than I like most other teams in the Big 12 being good, like Tech or Baylor or TCU.
I can see that. You know, I've always kind of had a curious fascination with going to an Iowa State game because I bet that, what is it, Cyclone Siren thing is hype if you're actually there in person.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll find out. But they already lost a game, so that kind of dampens my enthusiasm for actually going. But, I don't know, just an idea. This might be the year to go. If anybody else is out there thinking about it.
True. Good point. And Matt Campbell moving on. Probably not all that great for them, but probably good for us. All right. So thank you all for listening to today's episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. We also hope that, you know, you can try to attend this game. Yeah, this game needs to be rocking so that Spencer Sanders makes more of those mistakes. Josh will be back with you all next week, and he will review the matchup. And then after that, since we have a bye, if y'all have any questions that you want the team to answer, you know, we'd love to answer that over the bye. Give us some ideas for content, whatever it is. You know, don't forget to subscribe with whatever podcasting app you use and to follow us on Twitter for updates. Hook 'em, y'all.